Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Welcome back to class. We don't have a lot of time, and I've been hearing a lot of scuttlebutt around the classroom about a lot of things. We do not approve of that. At the Umbrella Podcademy, all facts here, no rumors. I'm Alex.
Pete, I put a whoopee cushion underneath the professor's chair.
Yeah!
Wait till he sits.
I can hear you, Mr. Tyler.
What? Oh. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And this is Umbrella Podcademy. We're going to be talking about the Umbrella Academy on Netflix. Still making our way through season one here. We're going to be talking about, as very cleverly teased by whoever that was at the beginning of the podcast.
Yes,
I heard a rumor.
I can't believe we pay that actual English professor to come here and just kick off the cast.
Mm-hmm. Too much money, to be honest.
Definitely.
Yeah, we're going bankrupt. I heard a rumor about that.
It feels like a sort of a reverse Mrs. Doubtfire situation. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, God, I know exactly what you're talking about. Classic reverse Mrs. Doubtfire. Mrs. Euphigenia Doubtfire.
Oh, sweet flex, dude. Doubtfire.
I know her first name, man.
I never Doubtfired you.
Oh, you would
know that.
So, usual word of warning here at the beginning. We're going to speed through the plot of the episode and then talk about some of the bigger moments, things that we like, things that we maybe took issue with. So, watch the episode first. It's the eighth episode of season one. But the big things that are going on here is Allison is hot on the case of Harold Jenkins, a.k.a. Leonard, the guy who sucks. She is trying to track him and Vanya down. Meanwhile, Vanya is trying to get Leonard better. He was beaten up last episode. She used her powers really for the first time, or at least semi-consciously for the first time this episode. Last episode and this episode, she is taking it back. He's trying to train her, get her to use her powers, using specific things from Reginald Hargreaves' diary. And we get a bunch of flashbacks to young Vanya here, where we find out more about what happened, that her power was out of control. Reginald Hargreaves locked her up in an isolation tank, and then Allison came by and rumored her to forget that she had powers because Reginald was so scared.
You hate to see it.
Very sad. We'll definitely talk a lot about that. But then back in the present, while Allison is tracking them down and ultimately has a conflict with Vanya where her throat gets slit and she gets left for dead, the boys are all being sad sacks all by themselves, kind of wandering and moping around a little bit. Luther in particular, getting drunk. He hooked up with a lady, even with his big old gorilla body. Klaus is very happy about it. But slowly they start to get it together and they get the band back together and head off after Allison and after Vanya, but they get there a little bit too late. And now the other thing we should probably mention, actually two other things we should probably mention. One, Pogo does in fact reveal that Klaus's dream, vision, whatever happened the last episode with Reginald was accurate. Reginald did in fact not kill himself, but let himself die in order to motivate the team to come back together to save the world. His final bit of dick fuckery, I guess you could probably call it. And then on the other side of things, we get Hazel and Cha-Cha. Hazel is running away with his donut lady. He comes to a realization by the end of the episode that he can't just let the world end. He's got to do something first. And Cha-Cha, meanwhile, covered in blood, blows up the donut place and comes after them. What were you going to say, Justin?
Her name is Agnes.
Agnes.
We learned today that her name is Agnes the Donut Queen, and she's a great doodler, and it's sad to see a donut place go. Pete especially must have been upset.
Oh, man. Heartbreaking. You didn't need to do that, Cha-Cha. You didn't need to do that.
I have a bigger problem with the fact that she did the looking away when the explosion is happening. Here's the thing. If you blow up a donut place, look back. That's cool. You want to see that.
No, it's cooler you to be walk. Able to, it's cooler to keep walking.
You want to be able to catch any like donut holes in your mouth that are flying out of it, like a donut eruption.
Yeah, it's like a donut volcano, basically.
Yeah.
Now, Pete, were you torn between your love of cha-cha and your love of donuts everywhere, all donuts everywhere?
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. Emotionally, I understood why she did it, but it was just still so heartbreaking to see it happen.
What is a circumstance, Pete, where you would blow up a donut shop?
It would have to be like scorned love type of situation. You know what I mean?
Oh. Like the donut that you're married to cheated on you with a cruller or something?
Exactly.
Great. Pete, would you ever see yourself? Could you ever see yourself owning a donut shop?
Oh, it'd be glorious. But problem is, by the time I opened, they would be gone.
Tasting the old product.
Yeah. You'd be that scene of donut Homer in hell with the donut machine just shoving them into his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, time to make the donuts. Well, time to eat the donuts. Well, we're out of donuts.
Hey, Pete, if you open up a donut shop, you could call it like the Dirty Dozen or something. That would be pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool. And you could serve dirty old donuts.
Your
dirty
donuts. Eyebrows and eyes when you said dirty just really turned me off to the whole idea.
Oh, I'm going to come in there and lick those donuts.
You could serve sexual donuts. Mm-hmm. Like really, like very sexually charged donuts.
Yeah, like a Bavarian cream that just like squirts out when you press it a little too hard.
Oh my god!
And that, all the donuts
they do
go.
That already. I don't know why you had to sexualize a Bavarian cream.
That's already the most sexual donut.
Yeah,
no one would argue with that.
So let's talk through some of this stuff. I mean, we started here with Hazel and Cha-Cha a little bit. Justin, I'm curious to hear from you. How are you feeling about Hazel and Agnes, as we now know her, Agnes's relationship?
Not all the Hazel and Cha-Cha stuff and now Agnes, it seems not fun. Everyone seems bummed out. And they started as these like fun, badass assassins. And they're like not in love with the game anymore. Hazel's like, the world's ending. I want to have a new life. But he hasn't committed to that. He's sort of like waffling a bit. Cha-Cha on the other side is like, I don't care. I'm an assassin. I'm going to keep assassinating things, including my lifelong or tenured partner or whatever. So it just feels a little muddled. And it's my least favorite part of the show, which I know is weird to say when it's Pete's here.
Yeah. It's insulting for you to say that in front of me. I think they're a fun part of the show. But also, I understand what you're saying. This was a tough episode for me because, like, when we get to the end and what happens, like, that was really depressing for me. I was very sad about that choice.
To leave Agnes, for Hazel to leave Agnes.
I just feel like you committed to her, and now all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know what? I've got to go save the day? Or is he saying, I've got to go kill Cha-Cha?
Well, we don't know exactly what he's going to do at this point, but I do like that moment because that to me sells the relationship almost more than anything that's happened prior to this. The fact that he is inspired to do the right thing by her purity, by her earnestness, whatever that right thing is, I think is good. And that's a nice moment, and they do play that well.
See, I took it the other way. I felt like in that moment, he was like, I'm just taking advantage of you, Agnes, because you are this pure escape for me. And I know I'm not right for you. I'm just drawn to you like a moth to the pure flame. And he's like, I gotta go. I'm dirty. I'm a dirty part of this world. I have to go back to that world and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was kind of, when he saw the map, he was kind of like, oh my god, this woman has these plans and this life, and I'm gonna ruin, you know, birds for her.
I remember the person that ruined birds for me.
Yeah. You never forget it. You never forget.
No. Now I can't look at any birds. Big ones, little ones, flamingos, the prettiest bird.
Yeah. That happened for me.
What is the prettiest bird?
The prettiest bird?
Yeah.
Like a really nice bird. I don't know birds.
Like a really nice bird. I think like
you don't know birds. You know,
I don't know birds. I don't care. Birds and plants, they're just part of the landscape.
There are dinosaurs.
Yeah. I mean, dinosaurs are cool, but birds, no thanks.
Oh, no, brother, birds are dinosaurs. I got to show you a biology book.
Yeah. There have been some changes since you went to school.
All right. Well, that's pretty much covered. We've covered their scant storyline of this episode.
Well, let me.
Okay, go ahead, Pete. What else?
But let me just say, like, do you think he is going to try to stop the apocalypse so they can be together? Or do you think he's leaving her? Or do you think he's just making sure Cha-Cha is not going to follow them?
Who are you asking? Because both you and I have seen this entire show. Justin?
Yeah, Justin? I haven't still.
You can't be like, you can't tell me in the moment what you were thinking, you, even though it, you know it now.
I mean, I think I told you. I actually, to be perfectly honest, I don't remember what he does.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember from the comic either.
Right.
So I truly am watching this like, oh, shit.
Yeah. I do think he's going to try to, just based on the dialogue, like, stop the apocalypse or hold off the apocalypse or try to help the Umbrella Academy in some way. Because if it is him being like, I got to do one thing first. Kill Cha-Cha. There's nothing interesting about that moment. Instead, that's just like staying separate from the main storyline. I think the only utility could come by having him intersect with the main storyline again in some way, because they've literally veered off into a different geographic area than everybody else.
But you got to wonder what he thinks he can do. Like, he only knows very little about what's happening. He's only been assigned to kill number five. What's he going to go over there and be like, hey, man, need a gun, guy?
Yeah. Shoot the apocalypse right in the face.
Yeah. So I don't know. To me, it's something he that's why I was saying before. He feels like he took the easy way out, took advantage of this poor donut queen, and he's going back to the OK Corral for the shootout no matter what happens. I don't know if he thinks he can save it.
I think he misses badass like gun scenes with really cool background music.
Maybe he's like, I gotta do one thing. Get my cool animal head.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably what it is. Exactly. Can we talk about anything else in this episode? So let's move on. Sorry. It's like, I know you love it. I apologize, Pete. But let's talk about literally anything else. Let's
Cha-Cha. Yeah. So she is walking. She has bloody sleeves. Okay, yes, Alex, what do you want to do now?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing to probably talk about, like, Allison obviously is the main driving force behind this episode. This is her episode. One thing when I rewatch this, in my head, played out exactly what Pete is going to say when I bring up this moment. So we get this great sequence at the beginning of her driving, flashes back to a year ago. She's telling a story to her kid. Her kid doesn't want to go to sleep. We get a little animated Umbrella Academy stuff. I forgot to look up his name beforehand, so maybe when you guys are talking, I'll take a look, because I know who the artist is.
Is it Scott C?
Yeah, it's Scott C. There it is, yes.
Because I have one of his, I have a Twin Peaks print of one of his pieces, and I thought it worked really well. Meshes with the style of both the comic book and the TV series.
Yeah, but part of me really wanted to see the comic book here, you know what I mean? Like,
it's weird that they didn't use Gabriel Bá, right?
Yeah. He's credited. He gets a shout out. Like, why not use his art that got us here?
Maybe he's busy.
Yeah. It might also just be because Scott C. purposely has a more childlike style, and this is supposed to be Claire, Allison's kid, imagining it, versus her telling the story, which might be more in Gabriel Bá's style.
Which just seems like such a natural fit to show us the comic strip.
But Scott C. is great. I was excited to see his stuff. But then the kid won't go to sleep, so she rumors the kid to sleep, and that's where the marriage clearly broke up. We get a bunch of like...
Patrick just happened to be there.
Patrick doesn't like that rumor shit. And, you know, as a parent, you never have that fantasy.
No, never.
Right?
Well, the thing that I pictured in my head was Pete being like, well, you guys are parents, and have you ever thought about doing this? And Justin, I agree, not even the once.
Not ever. I listen to every little squeal from my little darlings.
When my daughter was younger, when she was probably about like one or two, not 2 years ago, but like one and a half, when I was trying to get her to sleep, she would love to hear Cat in the Hat. And so I would read Cat in the Hat, which is a pretty long book. Mm. And then she'd be like, again. And sometimes I would read Cat in the Hat upwards of six times in a row before she'd go to sleep. And by the sixth time, I would say, well, I want to hear it more. Because I love you.
Did you feel like you were being bullied there? Because that's straight abuse. Like, she's really abusing her power over you.
No, the worst thing
was... She rumored you.
Rumored me. The worst thing was... this is way off track. But the worst thing was when she was super little to fall asleep, she would, like, take her tiny little fingers and put them on our elbows and, like, lightly caress our elbows and just get harder and harder and pinch them to the point where my wife and I, particularly because it took such a long time to get her to sleep, would just have horrible, raw, chapped elbows. And sometimes now she's 10 years old, because we've told her this story, she'll come up to us and like kind of pinch her elbows a little bit, and it's direct PTSD.
Wow. Wow. That's wild.
That's messed up that she still is messing with you.
Every day, man. Every day. We raised her right.
Wow.
That said, like, I think there, as a parent, there is, in all honesty, no way of watching that scene and be like, oh my God, I would do that. I absolutely feel for Allison in that moment, and I know why she feels bad, but that is legit a real thing that every parent would do in an exhausted moment for weakness if they absolutely could.
Yeah, but Patrick doesn't have any of it. He's just out the door, and perhaps we'll never see him again.
Yeah.
Claire maybe we'll never see again because Allison doesn't seem to care much about her.
Yeah. Yes. That's 100% true.
It did look like Patrick was just pausing in between working out, so he's probably just going to go get more ripped.
Yeah, probably. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was, which I thought was interesting, was Allison wandering out to the set of Reno 911 and palling around with one of the cops there for a while. What'd you guys think about that?
Shots fired, man. You don't like Reno 911?
I mean, I don't like Reno 911.
I guess you don't like tiny mustaches.
Yeah, I don't like Officer Dangle or whatever it is.
Oh, you know his name though.
I've watched every episode so that I know that I hate it. Add on Queeby. I've watched all the Queeby episodes too.
It's Quibi, you asshole. Why are you saying it weird?
I don't know. It's a terrible service. That's why.
Quibi's the very successful service.
Stop saying Quibi. No, who are you?
Quibi's a failed service of short, quick bites. Quibi's a very successful service of all Reno 911 episodes.
So wait, what did you guys think about this storyline? Because I honestly actually did think it was kind of fun in a very weird, quirky way in the right way, which I was very surprised about.
Yeah, I liked it too. I mean, that's the thing with this show, is this show... It takes itself a little seriously. I think that's something we talked about a little bit maybe throughout the whole thing. And so these moments where like the characters are having fun really pop, and it makes me wish there was just more of this earlier when they had more time to just play. Because the scenes between Allison and the cop were fun. He's like clearly like, yeah, I'm with Rumor. Yeah. Things are cool. it was good. And he's like sort of a hard ass in the wrong moments and then a goober in the other ones.
Yeah, I liked how he was like, oh, I guess this is an episode of You Fooling Me or whatever. And I was like, wow. I think it was fine. What really bothered me was the ending of the app.
Well, let's talk about that then, because I assume that ties into the Vanya storyline, which is a big storyline here. I think, as usual, Ellen Page is great in this, even if Leonard continues to be a creep and awful, and I don't know why she's not picking. He's terrible. Leonard's terrible.
Yeah. The worst.
But Ellen Page is great.
And it's really well done in this episode, especially. You get to see her see him slowly just working her. And then he's using the information he got from the Hargreaves journal and just slowly spinning it around her and getting her to do exactly what he wants. And then we find out what we suspected last episode, that he set up the attack.
Yeah.
It was great. You get to see him walk in and after Vanya has slit Allison's neck, and he laughs.
Yeah, like, smile was so creepy. Like, oh.
Like, well, because this plan, this is a very big long shot of a plan that he made up in a minute, like on the spot when he found that journal. So it's crazy. He's happy that it's paid off. Like, it's insane that it's worked out this well for him.
Yeah. I do like, as much as I hate Leonard, I do like how unhinged he gets this episode. Just that every single thing he's doing is so obvious, and only because Vanya is losing it the entire time does she not pick up on any of this. Like, I think she would. She's smart. She's an intelligent character. But the way that Leonard keeps explaining things and he keeps messing things up and basically telling her what's going on, he knows too much information. Like you said, he laughs when he sees Allison and maybe dead on the floor. But the way that Ellen Page plays it is just this spiraling fugue state of confusion that comes off very well, particularly in that awful confrontation between Alice and Vanya, which, again, I think is very well played.
Yeah. Oh, I think especially Ellen Page just pops so well when she, like, finally, she's been so restrained to this whole thing and sort of melancholy. And when she finally pops and her hair just sort of, like, it feels like a special effect almost, that her hair sort of like going wild, and it really worked, I thought.
Yeah, but it was just so upsetting the way she like escalated it, you know?
That means it was working on you, Pete. It was upsetting because it was meant to be. It wasn't an accident. These aren't people who you could knock on the glass of your TV and be like, hey guys, chill.
Those are my favorite shows, though. I love those shows where you could do that.
Yeah, it's so much nicer.
Like Young Sheldon.
Hey, grow up, Sheldon. Be more. Yeah. You're going to meet a bunch of fun friends.
Huh? Interruptibles? That's what they call them, right?
Yeah, the Interruptibles. It's the future of TV, brother. Let's get on that right now.
I hope so. That would be amazing. Where you could actually yell at the TV and it would adjust. Oh.
Yell at your TV so much, Pete. And for those of you that don't know, and we don't always watch television and movies together, especially now, but when we do, Pete yells and is loud the whole time. He's really bothered when I'm looking at my phone in the movies.
Yeah.
But he's comfortable yelling and waving his fist around like he's in some sort of rodeo situation when we're in a movie theater watching a movie.
It's fun. It's fun to yell things.
Do you miss that, Pete? Do you miss annoying everybody in the movie theater?
I'm adding to the experience, you know.
Oh, right. It's surround sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like the 4D thing where they punch you in the back whenever.
Don't you compare me to that shit show.
You're a human 4D.
I mean, I think we could talk about this. You used to work as a 4D chair for a while, right?
No.
Just for a short time.
What's happening in the movie? I have to release this smell when they go into the volcano or whatever.
Just turning around, spitting in people's faces.
Whoosh, 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 whoosh. That's the car. That's the car
but
starting.
But seriously,
whoosh, whoosh.
All Allison was trying to do was, like, get Vanya out of a bad situation. And it was just awful the way Vanya was reacting and then, like, losing her fucking mind.
But what I think is so great about this episode particularly, and the tragic plot of this season, is that all of the seeds were already sown. Like, Hargreaves did not take care of his children. He was an asshole to them. He treated them like weapons and objects. And in this episode, these flashbacks, which we haven't talked about yet, are so well done. And you see the way that he just abused her, locked her away. And Allison is so oblivious to it that she doesn't think it's a big deal to tell Vanya that she was the one who's ruined her life and told her she has no powers, isolating her from everyone her whole life. And she says it to her like, hey, great news, I remembered this. And she's like, of course there's going to be payback for that. Of course there's going to be a big reaction. It just so happened she has now realized she's the most powerful person in the world, or on the Umbrella Academy at least.
Yeah, but it's just so upsetting that, like, you're going to murder the person who's in the room that's trying to help you. You're saying you love the fucking creepy guy, but he's the reason you're in this shit show. And here's somebody who could actually help you, and you go and murder them because...
But it was an accident. I mean, I think the way that it's played, it clearly was her lashing out. She doesn't have control of her powers at all yet. I mean, if I got the movement correct, it kind of... I think you could probably intuit that the power built up in the bow, and she's almost using it as a wand, and it lashes out that way. So I don't think she's thinking, like, I'm going to slit my sister's throat, and that's going to be awesome. It's she is pushing back at her with this power that she doesn't understand, and that's the result that she immediately regrets. I'll say I like this... all of this sequence of this episode overall a lot better the second time through. The first time I watched it, I remember particularly being frustrated because Allison spends nearly the entire season not using her rumor powers, like the majority of the team, which generally I find very frustrating, this purposeful keeping everybody from using their powers thing that happens over the course of the first season. So she doesn't use the rumor powers, and then they make the decision to slit her throat, which obviously removes the rumor powers entirely. And my frustration, particularly from coming from the comic books and liking the comic books, is like, I want to see her use the powers, and now you completely took that off the table. Like, I know we got a little touch of it this episode, but that doesn't feel like enough to me. But knowing this was coming and knowing that was happening, watching it the second time through for taping this podcast, felt a little better because I felt like I could concentrate more on Allison's emotional journey and Allison's journey with Vanya. So overall, that played better with the foreknowledge, at least for me.
I was just frustrated with the amount of, like, death, because it was like, okay, we've got a shitty father who died and is no longer there. The fucking mom robot dies. You know what I mean?
No, she's back, man.
I know that she's back, but I'm just saying they, like, keep killing off characters that, you know, I like and, like, I, you know, want to see more of, and it's just a little frustrating.
You love Ben. You saw some Ben here. He just stands there sort of sour.
I do love Ben.
What do you love about Ben exactly?
Yeah, exactly. The only time I liked Ben is in the drawing in this episode when you saw him have tentacles come out.
No, Ben's a great character. He has to deal with Klaus and help Klaus, like, carry the weight of the shit that he has to deal with. The back and forth that he has with Klaus is enjoyable. I think it's fun that only Klaus can see him and interact with him, and Klaus, like, sets a place for him, pours him a cup of coffee. Like, this is cool stuff.
I look forward to the time when I'm dead, Pete, and I'm your Ben, which is coming soon, because I know you can have that power, and I hope you take the time to pour me a cup of beer or, like, a Negroni, how I like it.
Don't you dare like haunt me, bro, because...
I'm definitely haunting you. No, like, Pete, I have family.
Can you have two Bens, considering you also have that rat?
Yeah, I'm going to get along with that rat, too.
What rat? Sorry. Ratatouille? What rat are you talking about?
Ben, the rat.
Ben the rat. And then when that rat dies, I'm going to start to be friends with it because I'll have a ghost rat.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Wait, and we're also going to be around a bunch of ghost birds, too.
Pete, do I need to explain the Ben reference to you?
Yes, please.
Okay. There's a movie called Ben with Crispin Glover where he makes friends with a rat, and then the rat kills a bunch of people.
Right.
Michael Jackson song Ben, which is like Never Had a Friend Like Ben. That's about a murderous rat who eats people. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, I don't need to go back and revisit Michael Jackson songs, but thanks, though. Appreciate it.
And wasn't there a later rat movie also with Crispin Glover that was like a bad version of Ben?
Yeah, I think it was I don't remember whether it was like an actual sequel or like a remake that was also a sequel or something, but...
It was called like Willard?
Yes, that's what it was. It was another rat that he becomes friends with.
Do you think Crispin Glover is like, calls his agent and is like, I need another rap project and I need it yesterday?
I mean, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Should we talk about the dudes? I really do feel like, as much as I enjoy some of the scenes, particularly some of the Klaus stuff is fun, and I think him discovering Luther in the bed with the girl and making fun of him is a lot of fun. They spend this whole episode just kind of moving the chess pieces around the board and eventually getting to the same place, and that's pretty much it.
They're all just mopey dudes. Like, Luther had a fun night out. He's hungover. I get it. But they're all just like, well, let's go do this. Diego's mad, but he escapes like he needed to. And then they just sort of show up late at the end. So, again, yeah. This is another situation where I was like, this could have been a little bit more fun, I think, throughout.
Also, it was weird that, like, why is the oldest guy driving a car as they're driving to go save their sister? And they're just being like, you know, at one point, Luther's like, can we go faster? And number five's like, nah, I'm going to speed limit. And it's like, you know, your sister's in trouble, guys. We established that, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't really know that. I think it's his car, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I don't know who owns stuff.
Because Luther's too big to drive.
Right.
What do you mean too big to drive?
Too hairy.
Yeah, his big gorilla hands, his hair would get stuck on the wheel and he wouldn't turn properly.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Klaus is probably too shaky. Diego should drive, honestly.
Yeah, but he's like out on the run from the law, so if they got pulled over.
All right,
the thing, true. You can't have Luther drive because if he sees a banana truck, he's just going to turn into a banana.
Come on, man.
You know when you see a banana truck.
You know, classic situation. Not a lot to say there.
Or, sorry to interrupt, Alex, but this is really important. Or if they happen to be driving past Donkey Kong in a Mario Kart situation and Donkey Kong lays out three bananas.
That's another classic situation when you're driving. Love a good road trip. Anything else you guys want to call out for this episode before we start to wrap up here?
I do want to say, what is the deal with Professor Hargreaves being like, well, I want the team to come together, so I'll just die. Why didn't he have a better... Someone who prides himself on having solutions, often the wrong solution, but why was that his move?
I don't know. It seems like a pretty weak move that maybe they figured out. It feels like the sort of thing they were like, and Reginald Hargreaves is dead. We'll figure out why later. Okay, now it's time to figure out why. And I agree. It's very passive. As much as I like the scene with Klaus in the last episode. He's cruel the entire time. So him doing something like that would not really be. It is definitely a fuck you to his kids, but it's not a fuck you in the same way where he normally does it or the same way he normally does it. So it is a weird move. Pete, what do you think about this one?
Well, I'm not sure how to even address it, but I just think that, like, for things that I wanted to kind of touch base upon, I really love the Luther-Diego moment where Luther was like, you gotta lead with that, you know?
Oh, yeah, where he eventually brings up that Allison's in trouble and he immediately stands up and starts running away. Yeah, fun moment.
Yeah.
Fun.
And, that's the thing. It's like, we're just now getting into the dynamics and it's too late in the season. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I almost feel betrayed. I think that, like, Klaus was hysterical with the bell, like, waking people up and just, like, well, who does that? But it was just, like, a fun Klaus moment. I know we touched upon it earlier, but I just think that, like, just the way that they interact sometimes is really small but so cool. And I wish there was more ways we could kind of have nice moments like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're all kind of saying the same thing, that we're finally eventually getting around to a family dynamic. They're starting to have fun with it, and we're at the 8th episode out of 10 for the season, and it's a bit of a bummer.
And one of them's dead, and it's like, you fuckers couldn't get your shit together before this?
Yes. I think we've talked about this before, but there seems to be this very specific idea of cutting past all the family dynamic. We see them as kids, what they're like. To me, that is much more pleasing than this whole thing where they don't like each other and want to avoid each other as much as possible, which is very no but rather than yes and. Like having
them. Wow. Oh, yeah.
It is.
It's the second time he's done that.
Have them hate each other, but have to hang out with each other and work as a dysfunctional team. We've seen that in comics since time immemorial, and it's much more interesting than seeing everybody go off separately and do their own things, you know?
Agreed.
So,
yeah.
That all said, who got top marks for this episode? Who was our best boy, our best student, or best girl? Justin, do you have one?
Yes, I do. I'm going to give it up to Vanya this episode. Like I was saying earlier, like I think Ellen Page has had such a restrained performance, and we got to see it sort of finally uncoil here. And it's really hard to do that, I think, over the course of making, what is this, the eighth episode? Eight episodes of TV, and to really control your performance through, you know, that's multiple weeks of shooting is really hard. And I think she did such a great job here. And I still feel sorry for her, despite the fact that she is in a bad place and potentially killed her sister.
Pete, what about you? Top marks?
She didn't potentially. She killed her. We saw her. She's dead.
Yeah, but she can just Obi-Wan with Klaus and just hang with Ben, reconnect with Ben.
Right? It would be. I don't know if that's how it works, man, but it would be cool.
Honestly, if I knew I was hanging with someone pretty cool like Klaus, I'm ready.
Yeah, you're ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Nice. Pete, do you have a pick? Or
yeah, yes,
do you
I
just
do.
Complain about Justin's pick?
I'm going to complain.
You just
going
to complain?
I'm going to complain. I think I don't think we talked about how much of an asshole Justin is enough. I'm going to go with the donut queen.
Agnes?
Yeah.
Agnes?
Yeah, she just...
That's
you know,
her name.
Yeah, the donut lady, a better life is another name that she could go by. But I think that, you know, she's her kind of small little stuff that she does that really gets to Hazel is very enjoyable. And it's a relationship that you're rooting for, but we don't know if it's going to happen.
Great. I know who I want to pick, but I do actually have to pick Allison, I think, for this episode.
Yeah.
Good stuff with her across the board, even if I did find it frustrating the first time through. I think she still portrays it well, and there is some emotionally complex stuff she plays, particularly opposite Vanya, and those scenes are very good. And that's a relationship that has been built up over the course of the season, so it's nice to see it come to fruition, albeit in a absolutely terrible way. And that is it.
Wait, ooh. Who was the person you wanted to pick?
Klaus.
Klaus.
Yeah.
Klaus.
The only problem, like, I love the stuff Klaus does in the episode, and it's so much fun to watch him every time, but he's barely in this episode.
And I will say,
given that Pete said Agnes, I felt like I couldn't follow it up with Klaus.
With an equally esoteric character in this episode?
Yeah.
You know who I loved? The extra in the scene in the hospital room who was sort of wandering by. Because that extra, I believe her name was Patricia, she was holding charts for other patients. And it really opened up a whole world. It's like, what's wrong with these other patients?
Right. Yeah. Like an Umbrella Academy hospital-based universe.
That's what I would really like to see, this small upstate hospital or wherever it is.
All right, that is it for Umbrella Podcademy. If you'd like to hang out with us, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. We'll chat with you about Umbrella Academy if you like, ask some questions. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Podcademy on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, at the Umbrella Podcademy, Pete, put down that Bavarian cream. No! No, not the Bavarian cream, Pete!
We gotta stop paying that guy.